Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Once Upon an Irish Summer by Wendy Spooner. Two teenagers, two centuries, one city. 1817 Ireland. Alan Hamilton crosses the Atlantic alone to find a way to save his family from imminent financial and social ruin before it's too late. Instead, he is met with prejudice, sickness, and starvation. 2018, Fort Wayne, Indiana. A gifted young artist struggles with debilitating grief after a sudden death in her family. When she unearths Alan Hamilton's noble rise from rags to riches in antebellum America, their shared connection inspires her own healing and renewed inspiration. Based on a 200-year-old letter collection, Once Upon an Irish Summer brings to life and weaves together this true story of romance, mystery, and hope.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hemmerker, and I'm so glad you joined me. Today I'm chatting with Wendy Wilson Spooner. She's a professional genetic genealogist by day, a writer by night, and an artist in between. And we're going to talk a little bit about her debut novel, Once Upon an Irish Summer, and about writing romantic suspense. So welcome to my show, Wendy.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so I got to ask, genetic genealogist, that just sounds like the coolest job ever. So can you tell us what is that?
A genetic genealogist is a niche field in the broader field of genealogy. So I use DNA testing along with genealogical traditional research combined to find the biological families of my clients who are mainly adoptees or those who are looking for their biological fathers. And it's a lot of people.
Yeah. So are you like self-employed or
do
you work for a company?
I could work for many companies out there, but I choose to be self-employed so that I can pursue all of my other interests and I'm not tied to any company.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just that just must give you a lot of fodder for writing romantic suspense.
It does. You would not believe the stories that I unearth when I am solving the mysteries of my clients' biological origins. You could never dream this stuff up. It is so fascinating.
Can you give us a little, without naming names, can you give us, you know, what's one of your more, oh my goodness, I can't believe this is like real life kind of stories?
Well, okay. So one of a very interesting client case that I had was tied in some way to a notorious United States senator. And this senator's name kept coming up in my research. And by the time I drilled down and found out what the real story was behind this, this senator had a niece who got pregnant in the 1960s. Mm-hmm. And the father of this baby wanted nothing except to take responsibility and do whatever he needed to. And this senator was not having it, and he shut this kid up and threatened him and said, you'll never see this girl again, just disappear. And this boy was told later that the baby miscarried anyways, which at the time he didn't know what to believe, and he
right.
hoped for 50 years that someday he would get a knock on his door, that child would show up, and that is exactly what happened. That was my client.
Oh, and they had
the most incredible reunion. And I can't really say anything else about the senator.
Sure.
I can't give any clues to who that person was.
Yeah.
But it was one of the most fascinating mysteries that I've solved, and it also had one of the most happiest endings ever. It was just wonderful.
That's just
par for the course for what I do. Yeah.
Oh, wow, that is just great. I mean, that is like tailor-made for some, romantic suspense novel. I mean, change enough, because there's enough people of power, shall we say, who would act in that way throughout history. We've all seen it. So you could definitely, that would be a great story. Have you ever thought about writing that story?
Well, I would have to get serious permission. It's possible, but I write to interest my readers in the stories that they can find in their own family trees. Because it can be life-changing for people when they connect to their ancestors. And it doesn't matter if they were incredible people who did amazing things, or if they were a convict, or if they died horribly. It honestly doesn't matter who's in your tree, because you can learn from every single story and become a better person by understanding who you come from.
Right, and your debut, I mean, your novel, Once Upon an Irish Summer, you base that on some, there's some truth in that, right? Based on actual letters, is that what you?
Yes, so it's actual dual timeline. So it's
Okay.
the present day characters who are researching the past, and the historical chapters are woven into the present day chapters, and the historical chapters are based on the true life story of my fourth great uncle, who was a kid in Ireland whose family was falling into ruin and despair, and he decided to cross the Atlantic alone to find a way to save them from starvation and typhus fever. And it's who he became in the United States that I decided to write about this young man, because he left behind 15 boxes of manuscripts called the Hamilton Papers. And within those papers is a 200-year-old letter collection that was written from his parents to him after he came to America, which tells their story being left behind. And then all of his manuscripts tell the story of his rise in America. And it is just utterly the most inspiring story ever.
Wow, that's, yeah, I'd write about it too if that was my ancestor.
Yeah, and just and the romance between who he ends up marrying, and this is pre-Civil War, and this young lady that he ends up marrying, they both were abolitionists long before the Civil War and were so like-minded, and had wonderful children who then had wonderful children. He just left this legacy of people that did great things in this country. They were just of the most stellar character. And so I created a fictional descendant of this young man who was a struggling teenager, a gifted artist. And it's what she learns about him that helps her overcome her struggles. And there is just the sweetest, best romance in the present day chapters too. It is the cutest. I love these characters so much.
So let's switch gears just a little bit. That's great. And our listeners are you're going to get an excerpt from that. So stay tuned till after this interview. But romantic suspense, which is the topic of my podcast, since I write romantic suspense, what do you think is the most frustrating part about writing romantic suspense? You go first, and then I'll go.
The most frustrating part. I think that it might be the contrast between romance and suspense, and making sure that you can weave those together in a right way so that they work together. And I think that romantic suspense is highly intriguing. Just to hear those two words together makes me want to read a book. And like
Yeah,
romantic
and
suspense, yeah, I want to read that.
I know, and I what I find frustrating sometimes in writing it is keeping that element of suspense believable. I think that sometimes we're too saturated in the Hollywoodization of, suspenseful shows, and the temptation, I think, is to go over the top with, serial killers or violence. Not that you can't write about it, it just seems like I prefer, and I think this is what I struggle with a little bit, because I prefer to write about ordinary people in extraordinary, you know, they get these situations, but I want to make it believable, so I don't want them going to the hospital every two chapters, you know, and then they go out again. I'm like, okay, that is like six concussions, and we're only on page.
Oh, gosh.
And, you know, so just that, to me, that, I wouldn't say frustrating, that's the most challenging part, is trying to keep that, you know, accuracy and think, okay, how would I? And sometimes I'm like, just go to sleep. Please sleep, because I, you know, you really can't be going on going on like this. Yes, I talk to books when I read them. So
I love that. I do the same thing.
Yeah, I'm like, really, the whole sleep thing just drives me crazy, Wendy. I'm always like, I guess because I need a lot of sleep, I'm like, are you sure you're still standing? Because according to this, you haven't slept in like 50 hours.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, it amazes me, though, because sometimes a character, you know, is going to step into the realm of maybe a little unbelievable, but sometimes that's what we like, right?
Yeah.
It is a little bit over the top, makes us stretch our minds. Ooh, could someone really do that?
Right. Yeah, and I think that's kind of the frustration, is that I try to, you know, to not fall into the total realm of, oh, that's unbelievable, but oh yeah, I could see that. So that can be frustrating, I think. You know, to kind of bring the readers along.
Tricky.
And so what I love about writing romantic suspense, what I find rewarding, then you can answer too, Wendy. And I do love that romantic thread with it. I love the satisfying happy ending. I'm a happy ending girl. I love the happy endings. So I'm going to give my readers the happy ending. So that's my favorite part about writing romantic suspense.
Oh, I love that. And I love the happy ending aspects, too. I'm definitely like that as well. I love to take my readers on a really wild ride, though, like I'm sure you do, where they're not sure there's going to be a happy ending. And as I'm working on the sequel to my first book, people keep asking me, what is going to happen with this situation? Can you just tell me? Like, I can't tell.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, although I do, I confess, true confessions here, that sometimes I do look at the end of the book.
Yeah.
Not mine, but, I mean, I know how it's going to end because I'm writing it. But I do look at the end of the book sometimes, and then I'll go back and read it. Drives my husband
so
crazy.
I hear so many people say that. I don't know that I've ever actually done that myself, but the funny thing is if somebody tells me the end of a book or a movie or something, it does not ruin it for me. I want to go back
thank
and I want
you.
To know how that, yes, I want to know how that ending came to pass.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, okay, you know, my reading time is limited. I wish I could read a lot more, but, you know, I have a busy life.
I do.
I have five children in my home, and as we're recording this in September, you know, half of them are virtual learning, you know, so I got little things going on. So I am, even before then, though, I am not going to spend time on a book unless I'm really engaged in it. And I have no problem with saying, I'm done with this book. And so sometimes I will go and look at the ending and think, okay, if I kind of like how they end it, then I'll go back and read up. And sometimes I'm like, yeah, that's okay.
Oh, yeah.
But I can't do that with e-readers.
I totally get it. Oh, right. No, I get your strategy. I totally do. I listen to audiobooks right now more than I ever have because I love being immersed in stories. And think about how much time we spend in our cars, for heaven's sake. Yeah. So it just works.
I love audiobooks. I've been a huge fan. I started listening to them a lot when my kids were little because I didn't want to listen to their little chatter while I was cooking dinner or whatever, or cleaning or something. I mean, not that I love my children, but, you know, one has to have a little adult thinking time. So audiobooks provide that. And now, of course, we can all listen to it on our phones or, I still have a CD player in my car. Our car's old.
I do too.
So check them out in the library. Get those CD players. Well, we are almost out of time, Wendy. Is there anything else about your book or your writing that you would love our listeners to know before we sign off?
Well, wow, I can't believe how fast this went. It's been so fun talking to you. Once Upon an Eilish Summer is the first book in a trilogy, and the story continues throughout, and it is suspenseful, and the romances follow through every book, and there will be fantastic resolve. So you get it at the end of the first book. You'll get it at the end of the second book, but at the end of the third book, you'll get the big Mac Daddy resolve on everything.
Wow. You better hurry up and get writing then. You're only on writing book two.
I know. I feel like that every day. You better hurry up and get writing.
Yeah, we all feel that way, Wendy. All writers feel that way. Hurry up and get writing. Well, thank you so much for being on my show today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Sarah. It's been fun.
You've been listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hammerker, and I've been talking with Wendy Wilson Spooner. She's a professional genetic genealogist and a writer, and her debut novel, Once Upon a Summer, is out now. Stay tuned, and you can hear an excerpt from that. I hope you join me next week.
Now an excerpt from Once Upon an Irish Summer by Wendy Spooner. Standing atop the fort, I frowned as I observed the road through the trees. Many hours had passed since I expected Emmerine and her father's arrival. I swallowed hard. Had she changed her mind? In regard to Fort Wayne? In her regard to me? I watched and waited another half hour, but there was no sign of them. Slowly, I descended the fort ladder and went to check again the rooms I'd prepared. Clean linens and soft blankets covered down mattresses, purchased just for the occasion. Embroidered towels lay atop the cherrywood washstands, and fresh flowers filled the vase I'd placed in Emmerine's room. I walked to the gate and stood pulling my hair back with my hands when Mrs. Kent happened by. "No sign of them yet, sir?"
"I'm afraid not, Mrs. Kent."
I paced back and forth as she watched. Then I stopped abruptly.
"I can bear it no longer. I'm going in search of them."
Mrs. Kent laid a hand on my arm. "Take someone with you, Mr. Hamilton."
"No, that will not be necessary, but thank you all the same."
Striding to my horse, I called over my shoulder,
"My gratitude to you, Mrs. Kent."
I rode first to the nearby Miami Indian settlement, located at the confluence of the St. Joseph's, St. Mary's, and Maumee Rivers. There, the tribe held a strategic position controlling the portage between the Wabash River and Fort Wayne. Dismounting at the settlement, I paced through the roundhouses and approached the central fire pit where a cluster of men stood gathered. Chief Richardville sent scouts out almost daily to detect disputes. After greeting them, I said,
"My Miami friends, have you any news of a traveling white man and woman today, or of any disputes southward?" "No, Hamilton, no, sir,"
came each answer. Further questioning yielded no clues, so I thanked my friends and left. Galloping off again with the fear of tribal disputes weighing on my mind, I headed northwest along the St. Mary's River, reaching my next destination in but a quarter of an hour. Dismounting, I knocked on the door of the two-story stately dwelling, the recently completed treaty home of the chief. The tribal leader opened the door.
"Mr. Hamilton, a welcome surprise."
Dressed in an emerald vest beneath a black knee-length tailcoat, the chief wore the European attire of his French father that day. I entered the home and followed the chief into the front parlor, where he motioned me to sit. Removing my hat, I sat at the hearth.
"Chief Richardville, my guests were due to arrive hours ago." "Your friends from Aurora?"
"The very same. Owing to disputes occurring between the various tribes this season, I'm worried for their well-being. Have you received any such news?"
The chief nodded.
Indeed. I received news of this nature but 2 hours ago. I've sent my men to investigate a quarrel due south 5 miles.
In haste, I stood to leave.
My thanks to you, John. This is not the news I'd hoped for, but I'm grateful all the same.
The chief nodded.
Please send word upon your guest's arrival, Mr. Hamilton.
Indeed, I will. I left the home in earnest and galloped back along the St. Mary's River until I reached the roadway leading south. Continuing my journey, I questioned each traveler I encountered on the way.
Pardon me, have you met an older gentleman and a young lady headed north on horseback?
No, sir, not today,
came the replies. I searched for any signs of the Holmans. Perhaps a dropped glove or such? But alas, I found no evidence of them on the highway. I decided to leave the road and extend my search to the southern woods. Soon I came upon the Miami men sent by the chief. I gathered from them that a band of Ottawa warriors had raided a Delaware village that morning.
Were there any white persons involved? I asked.
Many white men travel roads today, none in Indian villages,
answered one of the men.
You're certain?
Yes, Hamilton, not to worry.
With this both good and bad news, I now believed the Holmans had indeed changed their plans. Filled with angst, I turned my horse around and slowly plodded back to Fort Wayne. I've given my heart to Miss Emmerine. Truly, it belonged to her and no other. And I would offer her my world, if only she would have me. I soon tired of staring at the bare log walls of my quarters. Although my plans to receive Miss Emmerine were dashed, I pulled my boots back on, left my quarters, and climbed to the fort's upper level again. Leaning on an elbow on the short garrison wall, I took in the view of the St. Mary's River where dragonfly wings glinted in the sunlight along the banks, and bits from the cottonwood trees drifted through the air. On the road below, town residents passed by about their business. A woman with children in tow carried 2 buckets, likely full of chicory roots or blackberries. Then a young black boy, driving a herd of pigs, stopped to give me a hearty wave. Other children dashed by in a game of tag. My heart grew wistful. My greatest wish was to have Emmerine by my side, delighting in the activity of the village. From my viewpoint, the sight of the main road lay unobstructed through the tree line. In the distance, I watched a fur trader draw near, a man I knew well. His wagon piled high with glossy pelts, André Gassi came to a halt and unloaded the gleaming furs into his trader's shack. Then 2 horses trotted into view. I squinted into the distance. A man and a woman. A man and woman? I stared unblinking, standing fixed until certain. Miss Emmerine! I bolted down the ladder, skipping the last 4 rungs by jumping to the ground. I rushed to my quarters, straightened my cravat in the wash basin mirror, and viewed the Holman's rooms to assure myself one last time of their preparation. Mounting my horse, I dashed out to welcome my guests. Emmerine's eyes lit up as I drew near. She stood in her stirrups and cried out, "Mr. Hamilton!"
"Miss Emmerine!"
I urged my horse faster. Upon reaching her, I swiftly dismounted and caught her as she slid from her saddle. We laughed and cried in our joyous reunion. Embracing her, I reveled in our closeness. But Emmerine was trembling. I looked to Judge Holman, still atop his horse.
"Well, Mr. Hamilton," he said,
removing his hat, wiping his brow.
"As you can see, we're more than a little pleased to arrive. We've had quite a time today."
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.